This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Risking head and skin, if we're behind then never mind, we'll fight and fight and win, for we're from Tigerland.
G'day everybody and welcome to the 17th edition of Tiger Tragics, and it is a very happy morning for us today. I'm Mitchell Scott. I say hello to Tony Shebeki.
And I'm Tony Shebeki, and you're having a birthday,
Mitchell
Scott.
I am.
Congratulations to you.
Thank you.
That came up on my Facebook alerts.
Did it? There
you
go.
So congratulations. Just well done to you.
32 and not feeling any younger.
No, exactly. And here's Carl Bianco.
Oh, hello gentlemen, and happy birthday to you, having just had a birthday myself, so yeah.
We all celebrate a birthday in footy season.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
It's funny because last week everyone was like, happy 21st, Carl. Carl is the baby of the crew. You just turned 21.
Pretty much.
And everyone today has been saying, oh, how old are you? Mitch, 21. And I just go, oh, to be that young again.
How old are you?
I'm 32. Just turned 32. So
combined together, you are 3 years older than me.
We'll just stand on the top of each other, throw a cape over the two of us, and we'll try and get through together.
join for 18, you get 17 free.
Oh, exactly. Thank you.
So, tragedy has been my middle name when it comes to footy.
Well, it wasn't so
long.
It was tragic for a team yesterday, but it wasn't Richmond, thankfully. It was tragic for Fremantle.
Can I share with our listeners? We were all watching it individually. So you were at home watching it. Carl, I think you were at home watching it. And I was in the Virgin Lounge up in Sydney coming back from some motor racing watching it.
Yeah.
And we were having some banter before the game on Messenger or WhatsApp or whatever it is.
Every result that we didn't want to happen on the weekend went against us. So Sydney won, Port Adelaide won, and suddenly we were down to sixth spot and we were sitting, oh, great. You know, the equation essentially was we need to win both of these games to get top four. And we were having a bit of banter. Is this going to happen? And you know, the first bounce happens and 5 goals in the first 20 seconds of the game. And
my comment straight to the group was, we're stuffed.
We're stuffed. It was all over. We were looking at each other on WhatsApp going, we're done. Top four, wipe it. We're all gone. Thankfully, early birthday present came in the form of the next 2 hours and ended up being a 104-point victory to the Tigers and a big, really important depending on what happens this week, 6% boost in percentage. So it was 25-5, 155. So you talk about accuracy. Yeah, that's good. Not bad.
Well, that's amazing.
Did we kick 6 or 7 straight before our first point?
I know we kicked 8-2 in the second quarter.
Yeah, I think it was about 6 straight before the first point went through.
We were just, when you get to walk into goals and you kick them from 20 metres out, it is hard to miss. But it was our most complete performance, I think, of the year. Fremantle 7-9-51. And this is probably the first question, is how much do we take out of this result given...
And it's a very good question, Mitch.
Given what Fremantle dished up after quarter time.
It is a very good question, and they are crap. Fremantle are shocking. Let's cool our jets. It was a great win. Fantastic. 104 points. I was going to ask you, because you're a good stats man, Mitchell. Mm-hmm. When was the last time we won a game by 100 points? I cannot remember it.
GWS?
I think it was the corresponding round 22, 2015, against the Pies at the G, and there was a Gold Coast game. Those last few games of 2015, we belting teams off the park. Qs were in the rack. They were done. Gold Coast got blown apart by about 80 points, and I think we might have got the 100 because Dusty got in trouble, I remember, for giving the bird to the cheer squad members in the Collingwood at the end when we were just blowing it apart. But yeah, you're right. It doesn't happen
often. Exactly, especially when Damien Harwood came out towards the start of the year and said, you know, our team's one of those teams that said they're going to win by 30 points or lose by 30 points. We're not going to have blowouts.
And that's I think, what was really the heartening thing for us for this game was that when the foot was there to be put on the throat of a really meek opponent who just, you know, weren't firing a shot, we went for the jugular and we really made them pay. And, you could tell they had a sniff in that last five minutes because Fremantle, I think, kicked a goal or two, got it back to under 100 points, and there was a minute and 30 left, And we just went, nah, it's going to be 100. Bang, bang, two more goals. And there was the goal kicked after the siren to win it. But as you say, Shebex, that first quarter, we were, you know, feeling a little bit pessimistic. Fremantle were up, you know, Fife was dominating. Harley Bennell on his debut for Fremantle kicked two. And we were just sort of hanging in there. Townsend bobbed up, and we'll talk about him a bit more in depth shortly.
But a trait, though, hasn't it, of ours? Just those slow starts. Once we get into it, we're rolling. And it's just a matter of hoping that the damage has been minimised in the first 10 or 15 minutes and the team doesn't get four or five goals up.
I wonder if it's actually, because I found that the games where we've jumped out of the blocks early, like you think about GWS and Sydney and those types of games. We've fallen away. We struggle to find ourselves holding on, and we let teams back into the game. And, it's almost strategic, I think, maybe, in a sense that just hang around, don't fire your first shots yet. And then when you can put them to the sword, don't leave them an hour and a half to come back. Only give him, because it's all a balance of goals versus time, I guess. But certainly quarter time, we were down by 4 points, and our intensity wasn't there. Our defensive system was working really well. But then, you know, whatever Dimmer said at quarter time, my God, 8-2-1 behind. Kane Lambert comes out and just goes bang, bang, bang. And with 10 minutes to go in the quarter, the game was over and beyond reach. And, we started speaking a little bit more with spirits, and the messaging started going. And Carl, it was just it was breathtaking.
Look, it was really good. Really good to see. I mean, we could have gone over there and had a half-assed attitude towards the game, going over to Fremantle, you know, a couple of games left for the season, looking decent. But I think with the results that have happened across the weekend, Sydney obviously looking really good, and Port Adelaide sort of on the verge there as well, we really needed to go over there and give it a red-hot crack. I personally was expecting us to win by maybe 30 or 40 points. You know, get away with a 30 to 40 point win against Freo over there would have been a pretty decent result. But to the boys' credit, they went over there and they weren't going to, you know, give Fremantle an easy ride and just say, we'll beat you by 30 or 40 points. Everything was going right for us.
The pressure was outstanding in that second quarter when
fantastic. They
just lifted a notch. And then, you know, the bloke I suppose we should first talk about is, he got recruited at the end of 2015 to this club. I speak of Jacob Townsend, who came in for Josh Caddy, and we all went, oh, he finally gets his go, has apparently been doing great things in the VFL all year, and has played a similar role to Caddy in the VFL, sort of, you know, runs through the midfield but pushes up forward and hits the scoreboard. And he comes out and kicks 6 goals. And we where did this come from? You know, I mean, we've spoken about our depth this year. There's another one, Shebex.
Yeah, but Townsend seems to be one of those blokes that every time he does come into the side, he does well. I don't think Townsend's actually played a bad game in the half a dozen or so that he's actually played for us.
No, he's one of those players, I think, that he comes in when a certain player comes out of the side and there just aren't enough positions in the team for his type of player.
Which is unfortunate for him. So he's about 23 or 24.
24, came from GWS, was one of the ones who got pushed out of them for just simple too many numbers. He comes to Richmond. He played 4 or 5 last year, mainly on the back end of the season. Didn't really find a spot in the team. And then he comes in for his first game of the year. As Dimmer said in post-match, you know, coach has kept him waiting a long time this year, and he had a bit of a point to prove. And he comes in and he played the Josh Caddy role better than Josh Caddy. It's going to be really interesting come final. If he does that again next week, if he maintains that form and his role in the side, and, you know, we're going to have some real selection dilemmas come the first final.
I've said this before, though. Every player appears to know what their role is, and we've actually got that depth where you mentioned it before, how Townsend seems to be the Caddy equivalent in the VFL.
Yep.
That must be a true reflection on what's happening at Tigerland this year. People in the VFL are playing a similar role to what they would play in the AFL should they be selected in the best 22 for that
and
week.
And that's the way it's meant to be. That's why teams have had their own VFL team.
Exactly.
So that way they can run the same game plan through, and it just, when they step into the seniors, it's just like they're playing.
They know exactly what they're doing. And that's the success that Hawthorn has had and the success that the Bulldogs have had. I know not this year necessarily, but that's been born of that whole system. And, it's really refreshing to know that we've got, I was, when a team came out on, Thursday night and even Friday, and Oleg Markov, who's someone I've been critical of a bit this year.
He looked fit, I have to say.
I just don't, he looked good. When push comes to shove, as it stands right now, I don't think he's in our best 22. But
he did his role.
He did his role. He played well. He ran hard. He looked fitter. He used the ball better. He's been one of those players, I think, that when he has been in the side, his decision making's let him down a little bit. But look, I suppose there wasn't a hell. There weren't many bad decisions to have been made yesterday, given it was basically just spot up a teammate and keep going. Jack Graham debuted. We've been calling for his debut for a while. He's under 18 captain last year for South Australia. Lark medalist came down the order in the draft, and we managed to get him with a second round pick. And he's been banging the door down for a while. Had some injury setbacks. Comes in, and to let you guys know, he equaled the record for the most tackles laid by an AFL VFL debutant.
NAB Rising Star nomination.
11
sure.
tackles. So we might have another one there. And again, played his role. You talk about the pressure lift that came in the team and the pressure that has been such a big part of this team all year. 27 pressure acts from a debutant game one, which was the most by any player of the game. So he's got that appetite. He's got the skills. He bobbed up with a goal from a dubious free kick, but, you know, you take that and well done to the young man. And I was really impressed with him. I think he's going to create more selection headaches again for the rest of the season. What do you guys think of him?
I thought he certainly didn't look like a first year player when he was out there. He looked like he's got a massive build. I think they call him the fridge though. Have you heard that?
Yeah, because he's so solid.
Because he is so solid. Yeah, look, great signs there, definitely. And yeah, I look forward to seeing what he has to contribute to the Tigers. In the years to come, obviously, probably won't play finals. Well, I mean, it all depends on how hard it goes. But, yeah.
Well, injury-wise, we're looking like
not too bad.
Yeah.
We're all right. Like,
probably our tools have got the more sore bodies than anyone else, I think.
Yeah, and that's where it'll be interesting to see maybe in... I know that we do have the bye week coming up after as to whether in round 23 someone like Gasoldo did get dropped for this game. Does Nate Curvis go out? And you know what, Hampson, who we'll talk about the VFL in depth, you know, do we throw him and just give him a go to see if he's got the tank for it? Yeah. It is a risky prospect given what is at stake. But, but when we talk about who was best on ground, there's so many nominations who you could pick. Mm. I mean, Townsend kicking his six...
I'll tell you one that was knocking on the door for me.
Who?
And it was the best game that I saw him play all year, I reckon, and maybe in his career. Daniel Rioli.
Oh,
just
yes.
Showed a whole level of maturity that I hadn't really seen from him before in regards to the way that he very often dropped his eyes and had a look around and made sure that the right options were there. And he's had that in him, but he did this the whole game. And some of his handballs, some of his passes, I thought he was fantastic.
That's been the knock on him has been, can he do those brilliant things consistently? Which has kind of been the knock on Cyril throughout his whole career. Is everyone goes, oh, Cyril's highlights reel is great. But can he, you know, it's only been the last couple of years where people have sort of gone, you know what, he's a...
But I don't think Daniel's going to have the highlights of Cyril.
No, I don't
think... They're totally different players. Daniel is more an on-baller, more of a you know, go in and get the ball and get it out type of player.
Do you think
Cyril's more of a flashy, round the goals, you know, that sort of stuff.
Do you think he'll spend more time in the midfield moving forward, or do you think he's a genuine forward?
No, I think he's a genuine half-forward
yep.
who could probably rotate in the midfield as part of the rotation.
Mm.
But he's definitely got forward ability. But the one aspect of what I'm talking about that really stood out for me was when he found Martin on the lead. It was only a short kick.
Yes.
Could have gone long and probably could have had a shot himself. He was about 45 out. And some people may have thought that was the better option because Martin was coming hard on the lead and he had a bloke right on his tail. But he had confidence in Martin enough to put it in front of him, and Martin took the mark and kicked the goal. Really good, really good level of maturity, I thought, from Daniel Rioli this week.
It's fantastic to see. He's approaching that sort of 50-game mark coming up soon, if not early next year. And Dusty, I mean, we speak of Dusty. Dusty did what Dusty does. And, you know...
He did a couple of interviews. Interviewed before the match, interviewed after
the game. He's finally getting an appetite for talking. I wonder... we'll talk about that a little bit later, but 36 disposals. I think the knock on people that have had on Dusty this year is I think, oh, he gets a lot of the ball and, you know, he gets a lot of meters, games and all that, but, you know, does he butcher the ball a bit? Is his efficiency good enough? Well, he went 83% yesterday, 7 clearances, 2 goals. That's these days a standard Dustin Martin game. And there was a couple of... There was one particular kick to Jack Riewoldt in that last quarter where Fremantle was shot, but he burnt away from his opponent, took a couple of bounces and then spotted him up, like, on the chest, 65 metres away, just rolling off his opponent. Jack goes back and kicks the goal, and that was beautiful crisp as you know, like it was like Craig Foster levels of love of football, the way, you know, Fozzie talks about Barcelona. That's what I was getting from looking at that. I'm going to make a call right now. Ooh. Jack Graham will win a Brownlow. Brownlow medalist Jack Graham. I've seen one game. That's all. I've seen enough. He'll win a Brownlow. He's future Brownlow medalist Jack Graham from now on.
About Ken Pedersen when he first started his career.
Well, he might, maybe not a Brownlow pedo, but he might win a
BNF.
He might buy up with a Norm Smith for them this year.
I was saying the same about Aaron Fiora. Oh, well.
Let's not pick up the dust. That's no good.
That was the one that got away.
Dusty was fantastic. There was a bit of play that I think for me, and you know, if you've seen something similar to this, that sort of epitomises the change in the Richmond attitude this year. And it was in that second quarter. Kane Lambert, the ball comes in long to Kane Lambert. And Jack's running alongside him. In the Richmond of the past, Jack would have cried out for the ball. Give me the ball, give me the ball. Let me get the goal. Just handball it over the top. Ask for the cheeky one and try and snap it himself. Jack selflessly saw that the chase was on to get rid of Lambert. And I think it was Griffin Logue was the opponent. He just ran, put the perfect shepherd on, allowed Lambert to run into the open goal. And for me, that epitomises the sort of change in mindset of this team there, where we're not hungry, we're not looking to just, you know, it's all about me. And it is genuinely a selfless football club, and I'm loving it.
Yeah, there's a lot of that about. There's definitely a lot of that about at the moment. And it's great. They are working together as a team. Guys are running 100 metres to congratulate blokes on Alex Rance when he kicked his goal. I think everyone came from everywhere to pat him on the back and stuff like that. It is really good. There's a good feeling.
That was when we knew we were taking the piss, didn't we, surely? Yeah. When Rance went forward. He took a couple of marks, kicked a goal.
Did he actually just find himself forward? Or did he? Surely wasn't put forward.
Well, I don't think I think he might have just done it for the shits and giggles, to pardon
was it that, or was it a matter of maybe trying to see whether or not Grimes and Asprey could sort of hold the back line together without him just for a little bit test that theory?
They get too much into it, I think. Now.
They both certainly did. I think it was a case of, you know what, his opponent probably had run up that far and he just went, all right, I'll go and follow him. And,
I don't care.
And then he just happened to hang up there for a rest and
kicked a goal.
He's actually, I know people knocked his kicking back in the past, but it was a dead eye. It was straight through the middle from 45 on an angle. You know, defenders don't generally do that. So well done to Rancy.
I don't think he's going to be a Harry Taylor 2.0, though, and find himself in the forward line next year.
No, I'd much rather him down back doing what he does.
Same.
And it's an interesting goal-kicking list. You know, you look at the names: Townsend, Revolt, Butler, Lambert, Martin, Rance, Hooley, Rioli, Graham, McIntosh, Edwards and Nankervis. So one thing there, a lot of goal-kickers, which is fantastic. And two, some new names on there, which is great.
Every week there seems to be one or two new ones who bob up. And I want to say as well, I know we spend a lot of time on this podcast complaining about the umpiring, but there was no noise of affirmation or anything going on yesterday. I think we had a really good run.
When things go your way.
Yeah, when you're belting teams to that extent.
I didn't even know there were umpires on the ground, to tell you the truth.
They were actually, they were wearing that grey colour, which kind of blends with the Fremantle purple. Yeah. I actually, like when I first saw the goal umpires, I'm like, really, we're going to, you know, we might as well just have 24 out in the field for them. But
50 shades.
50 shades of Bradley Gray. But I suppose the question that gets asked out of all this is, after this result today, and, you know, Fremantle aren't very good, how the hell did we lose them earlier?
Well, exactly right. Let's put it all into context, right? They are the worst team in the league. I have no doubt about that. They're worse than Carlton.
Are they worse than Gold Coast?
Without a doubt.
You reckon?
Yes.
Well, Gold Coast have got like plenty of key players who aren't playing.
For the list that they've got, they are the worst team in the league at the moment, without a shadow of a doubt for me. How we lost to them in that first time down here at the MCG, and if you, as I said, you put it in context, 1 minute of football and one reverse decision, and we are on top of the ladder.
Don't break my heart, you bigs.
We really are hurts. On top of the ladder. We beat GWS. We beat Fremantle.
Dylan Grimes plays in front of Mundy, and Shai Bolton's 18 review
blokes,
goes the right way. And
18 blokes played in front of Mundy, and we were a chance. Anyway, let's not reflect.
Anyway.
That's for podcast number 22 or
that,
whatever it is.
That brings us forward now to what needs to happen this week. So, well, obviously, we were very nervous going into this game because we dropped from 4th to 6th. As a result of Sydney and Port Adelaide getting the wins, which didn't help us, unfortunately. West Coast were a fair chance to roll GWS there for a while, and that would have helped us dramatically as well, but that didn't happen either. So we're back where we were, basically, with the status quo of last of last week, that we're fourth, and Adelaide, GWS and Geelong sit ahead of us. Now, if we have St Kilda, Sunday, MCG, and we should pretty much know for the most part the equation for us going into that game.
The equation's simple. Yep. We just have to win.
We win. We
lose, and there are so many things that could turn out for the next couple of weeks, and they'll be disastrous. Just win and secure a top four spot.
Exactly. The important thing is that Sydney plays Carlton and Port Adelaide plays Gold Coast, so you would almost hand them those results to them right now.
Oh, yeah, you would, but gee whiz.
It is a funny old season.
Blues are up and running, aren't they?
Well, they were good on the weekend, Carlton.
This is the first time in 77 years or something they beat Hawthorn.
Yeah, about that. I think David Parkin was coaching them last time, and Wolsey was at centre-half forward. But they will know the results of those games before we play out.
So we
can know exactly where we're going to sit. And the other game that we'll know the result of is Geelong and GWS, which that's probably the most important one is to where we, if we win, where we will finish. So if we win, we finish third or fourth. We can't get top two. But that percentage that has been made up from yesterday against Fremantle means that there is a chance of a Geelong versus Richmond MCG final. If Geelong beats GWS by, I don't know how much it has to be. It's probably around about four goals, and then we make up that 2% gap. Now, Shebex, you make the point off air about how much that is, because of by the end of the year, your for and against is so much higher.
Percentages really hardly moved towards the last couple of games. That's why I'm so surprised we picked up 6%. I know it was a 100-point win, but that is a massive percentage pickup in a second last round of the year.
I think because you look at our for and against for the bulk of the year, our percentage has sat where it is because defensively we've been great, but we haven't been scoring heavily enough. And that was another great thing to come out of yesterday. Yes, they were playing witches' hats, but we showed that we can score heavily if we put our foot down. And you know, you talk about all those goal kickers yesterday. It was magnificent. But should we? So we win. And Geelong win, and we make up the percentage gap. You'll have a Geelong versus Richmond second versus third final at the MCG qualifying final. So that would mean we play at least two games at the MCG in finals.
And that would be a Saturday night?
Saturday night or Friday night. And
have Adelaide GWS in the Friday night.
Yeah, and that would be – that's our best chance, I think, of you know, but playing. I know Geelong are, I think Geelong are better team than GWS personally. I think GWS is still a bit vulnerable, but let's call it a home final if that's the case. However, if GWS beat Geelong or we don't make up that percentage gap, then we're heading up to GWS. Well, God forbid, actually, you know, Adelaide could drop to second if they happen to lose to West Coast, which I don't think will happen. I think Adelaide will know exactly what it has to do going into it. But that could happen. But we can't go. We're going third or fourth. If we lose, and this is where it's interesting. So depending on what happens to Sydney and Port Adelaide, fourth, fifth, or sixth. So if Sydney and Port Adelaide lose and we lose, we still finish fourth. Those guys have far superior percentage to us, so they will jump above us if we lose.
Can I just stay right here now?
Yep.
That losing is not an option.
No,
there is
no
way we can have a Richmond-Melbourne elimination final.
No.
Because that could just be, in my household, that could be good for no one.
And in my household too. The bride will leave me for a week.
It can be good for no one. No good can come out of that.
I think I read something that the last time both Richmond and Melbourne were in the final series together, I think KB...
Jesus was playing centre-half forward for Bethlehem.
KB was 5 years off being born.
Oh, really?
That's how far back we're going. Like, seriously, Jack Dyer was young.
1922 or something.
Something like that. Ridiculous. I think Josh Kay actually tweeted that out. I might just check that now. But, yeah, that is Melbourne, we did get the points over them this year, but Jesse Hogan is one of those forwards who does have a very good record against Alex Rance because he's a bit wiry and he's got good stretch arms. And Melbourne have got players in there that are that tough physical pressure sort of game plan as well. So that would, that'd be a real danger game, and that would be an elimination final as well. So,
Carl, you had a sparkle in your eyes just a second ago. What were you thinking?
I had a sparkle in my eyes because I actually didn't catch on to what you were talking about in relation to finals and playing Geelong at the MCG. I didn't take into consideration the points and where teams were at. So when I actually had a look at the ladder and realised how close it was between first and fourth, the fact that we're on 56 points, GWS are on 60, if Geelong were to belt GWS and we were to beat St Kilda by 30+, then that essentially puts us in third and Geelong
correct
in second.
Second,
so that would be why we get the home... Well, not the home as such, but Geelong get the home final, the G, and it's at the G. So
it has to, and it would have to be at the G. There is no way in God's earth that the AFL could schedule Geelong Richmond at Skilled Stadium.
Oh, I know Geelong. Yeah, well, Geelong's been talking tough about we should have every final down here, and you know that's their prerogative, and I take that. But
we're talking an extra 50,000 people coming to see a game.
I think we'd be marching down the street with torches. If it's one thing to have a home and away game that is their home game down there, but if there's a final,
the Brownlow stand will become the low stand because it will be pulled down.
But
just on that, is there actually a clause in the contract agreement between Geelong and the AFL which says, subject to Geelong making finals, there's a chance that they actually get a final, a home final Simmons Stadium?
No, well, the way the agreement works is Geelong has, it's three home grounds technically, which are Simmons Stadium, Etihad Stadium, and the MCG. The AFL will schedule them at which home ground suits their needs best, which essentially is capacity.
So the good thing about the final series is that the AFL control the final series and they can decide where they want. If they wanted to, they could hold Adelaide, Port Adelaide at the MCG. They could do that if they wanted to.
Because all those old agreements about where you had to have a final each week at the MCG,
yeah, they've all gone.
So we now, they've embraced the national competition
One that I believe still stands, though, is if they don't have a final at Etihad Stadium. Etihad Stadium is then
able to get
a couple of extra blockbuster games the next year.
Yes.
And that was my next question. Would the AFL be looking at utilising Etihad Stadium now that they have ownership rights to it?
Not if it's going to knock 35,000-40,000 people back
because
from getting through.
We know with Geelong Richmond, that's going to be like 95,000 plus. You'd have to say.
That's a fair question, though.
It'd be interesting to see if Geelong flew the flag a bit and maybe that was the compromise. But I think Geelong prefers playing at the MCG
of the agreements, though, is that if there is a final to be played in Melbourne, it gets played at the MCG.
Yeah.
Over Etihad.
It makes sense.
Even if it's St Kilda or an Essendon were to host it, it gets played at the MCG.
And that's why the Dogs, they had to play their home final against Adelaide a couple of years ago at the G rather than at Etihad. And I remember there was a guy, well, that's our home ground. And the AFL said, well, look, let's try and maximise the attendance here. And it actually turned out to be basically an Etihad-sized crowd. It was about 50,000 turned up.
Yeah.
And they lost by a goal and it wasn't the end of the world, so to speak. And, you know, they didn't really beat their drum about it, but internally they were going, well, you know, we'd prefer to be playing our games at Etihad. Ox actually threw up a mechanism last week, he said, as a suggestion for a blanket policy so that you stop the Geelongs and the Bulldogs and the St Kildas of the world complaining about not playing there. And that is, first 2 weeks of the finals, if you're the home team, you played at your home ground. So under this policy, if St Kilda made the finals and earned a home final, it would be at Etihad. Or you could be Moorabbin. Might as well be. Geelong would host it at Simmons. And then, therefore, for preliminary finals, it's entirely the AFL's discretion. So they would go, you know what? We're playing two games at the MCG. Get stuffed. We want to get 200,000 people through the gate. Whether that would work practically with like memberships and that sort of thing, because that's the other reason why, like, Richmond members sign up as if you're the member that has the finals tickets rights, where are you going to fit them in at Simmons Stadium? Because they all pay their membership and they all have a right to get a ticket to the finals should Richmond make it. So good luck closing all those guys out.
Just saw KB's
and
tweets. In regards to the fact that he's losing his tipping touch. He selected Richmond to beat Freo by 100 points, and the Tigers better than he actually thought, winning by 104. Good on you, KB.
Just keeping in touch with
him. Finally, one of his 100-plus margins came to fruition.
This is the stat. When Richmond and Melbourne last appeared in a same final series, Jack Dyer was 27 years old, EJ Witten was 8, Ron Barassi was 5, Bob Skilton was 2, and KB hadn't been born yet for 5 years. So
that's an amazing stat.
That goes a long, 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 long way back. St Kilda this week, they torched us in round 16, I think it was, by 80-odd points.
Yeah, the Matty Riewoldt
game. I remember we did the podcast that week, Chebex, and we really didn't read that much into it. We for us, it was a write-off.
Yeah.
I was glad I was away that week, to be honest.
Yeah, you're upsunning yourself on the Gold Coast, weren't
you?
I think the MCG suits us a lot better for this game, particularly if it does rain a bit. It will be emotional for St Kilda.
It'll be emotional for Richmond fans as well, because there is no doubting. And please get behind him, Richmond fans. I know you will, because we like that. But there's no doubting that Nick Riewoldt has been a champion of this game for the last 15, 20 years. So He is a modern-day legend, and he will receive the right send-off that he deserves at the end of this game, even though it's not St Kilda's home match.
Well, let's
no doubt. And obviously the Jack factor comes into that.
Yeah, I'm sure that you know Jack might even be one of the lifters at the end of the game when it comes time to cheer him off the ground. Wouldn't surprise me if that... Because he's had the official home one last night, which was, you know, he shed a tear. And, you know, Nick will treat this game as... You know, there is still that outside chance that they could potentially play finals, but again, they will know that by the time they hit the ground.
So, Jack's a Richmond representative of the lifters.
Who'd be the other one?
Game. Who's the St Kilda one?
Good question.
Let's throw that out on the Twitter at Tiger Tragics if you got one. If we've got Jack on one side to lift Nick Riewoldt up, who should be on the other side? Who's Aaron Fiora played for both clubs? Maybe we wheel him out.
Adam Patterson,
Stephen Ziller.
Adam Patterson.
Yeah, Adam Patterson played for both. But it's a must-win game. We got torched in every department last time, so it's hard to sort of get a read on what we need to improve on from last time. But I think, is it just a case of playing our style and we think we can back ourselves in? Or
If we play the football that we know we can play, and then we win this game easy. Seriously. St Kilda look good against North Melbourne. I have no problems there, but North Melbourne also a bit of a rabble at the moment too. So
North Melbourne have made a lot of teams look good in the last month or so.
We just got to stick to our structures. All that sort. Do all the cliche stuff that comes out week in and week out, but it is so important that you do it, because if you don't, and we've proven 1 minute of football where we didn't stick to our structure against Fremantle, it cost us 4 points. And potentially... cost us top spot on the ladder,
which is, you know, could be very costly in the scheme of things. I think
you've got to be on for 120 minutes. You can't afford to not be.
The interesting, everyone talks about St Kilda's got a lot to play for. You know, he's going to send off Nick Riewoldt, and they might have a final spot on the line. We're playing for a top four spot. We've got as much on the line as anyone. So I'd like to think that's the messaging this week from Damien Hardwick to you know, just treat this as a final that we need. This is a must-win game. Do not rest on the laurels. I don't think they'll be resting blokes. I think the bye after it, as much as people have knocked it, will help us.
But the bye's an amazing thing, and that's the reason why the AFL have brought it in, whether we agree with it or not. But the fact that they've brought it in means Richmond can play their absolute best 22 that they have available to them, barring injuries, for this game. Mm. And know that the blokes can then have a, you know, a week off the week after.
Would you, Carl, would you be making any changes to a team that won by 104 points? And the reason I say that is because Sam Lloyd had 50 disposals and kicked 4.
Yeah.
And Griffiths, Conker, they all got through. Sean Hampson got through again. Anthony Miles played really well. You talk about the depth. There's players there knocking down the door. But, you know, it's hard to... You can't drop a Townsend. He's kicked 6. Like, what do you do?
Yeah, it's a good question. I reckon just keep it as it is and maybe give... Well, Caddy's obviously going to be out next week anyway. Jacob, to his credit, came out and kicked 6 goals. I mean, can we really say that we expected him to kick 6 goals on the weekend?
No.
Probably not.
Take it to the bank. Mm. There will be one change.
There will be. There'd be at least one change.
It'll be Sean Hansen will come in.
You reckon?
You think
definitely coming in?
Take it to the bank.
To see whether or not he can play out 4 quarters?
Correct. Yeah,
that's
exactly.
A fair call.
Whether he can play out 4 quarters. He'll share with Dan Curvis, and they'll provide that second tall option.
That was my next question.
That could be the Clark Keating move that Brisbane used to rely on when they did so well. And if it comes off, fantastic.
And St Kilda, they have got a plethora of tools. You know, they do. That last time against them, we did get stretched with Membry, and they have a lot of those guys who can then run through the forward line as well. And you know, it'd be interesting to see. Actually, while we're here on that question. Assuming all of those guys that have been out for the bulk of the year are fit and available, Griffiths, Hampson, Conker, how many, if any of them, would you, if you know, all fit and available, would you like to see in that 22? And how many do you think would actually disrupt the game style if you put all of them in? Could that be the case?
I think you'd only take two. I seriously don't believe you could go with Griffiths. I just don't, unfortunately,
but
at the moment.
I'd argue that you wouldn't want to go with Conker based off past history. If you think about
who's he going to replace?
Well, that's another thing. Like, who does he replace?
Well, he's not going to replace Bashy. He's playing well at the moment. He's not going to replace Aspie.
Broad?
Nah. I reckon Broad's in his spot.
See, Broad's in his spot and kept Short out of it. Short's another one who's, you know, in that line of players who, you know, they like his kicking.
You would just hate history to repeat itself and have Conker come into a final where he's not needed and not be 100%. Like, if we go back, when was it? 2015, I think, Conker came in.
Against North Melbourne.
Against North Melbourne. It was just shambles.
It was a shambles, you're right.
And with all due respect to Conker as well, I love Conk, don't get me wrong, but yeah.
I think Hampson's the better prospect in terms of fitness.
Yeah.
But I think, Griffiths has more upside in that he's a genuine forward, but he is a big risk, as you say, because, look, he hasn't played much football this year. His form in the VFL hasn't been earth-shattering, and he has battled a shoulder issue as well.
And I hear what you're saying about the upside of bringing of Griffiths over Hampson, but what is the upside if he gets a hit?
Well, that's it, you're a man down, and you've got, and then Nankervis has to shoulder the load,
and you're a man down, and you're effectively two men down because you cannot play Hampson in the finals if you don't give him a run this week.
The only other question I wanted to raise is, would it disrupt our existing game plan, seeing as we've based it so much on having the small forwards, if we then bring another tall into the equation?
No, because Hampson picks up from where Soldo basically works.
Soldo was left out. Just
placing that.
I don't think you can. That's why I don't think you can have
just
Hampson.
Just a question.
I don't think you can put them both in. I think
can't have Hampson and Soldo in, though.
No. Too tall. And it's all about pressure, and they just aren't pressure players.
And unfortunately for Soldo, he's just not there at the moment. He's a good ruckman, but he's just not that forward you're looking for. No. Hampson offers you both options. Griffith offers you the forward option, not necessarily sure whether he's your ruck option. So that's why I think Hampson is the better bet.
And that's why it's worth having a look at him this week.
If you don't play him this week, I cannot see how they can play him in the first final. Have to have a look at him this week.
Exactly.
Because if you look at it as well, Nank can play centre-half and Hampson can ruck, and that's the positive that we've seen Nankervis do in the last few weeks. He's actually been centre-half forward and kicked a few goals, and Soldo's been taking the ruck, majority Spot of the on. Ruck work. So there you go.
Two real quick ones before we go, because we do have to sign off shortly. Chris Yaron, it emerged on Thursday. The video came out of him that he revealed that he'd been battling ice addiction during, the timeline wasn't exactly clear, but essentially it was whilst he was at Richmond, and Mark Williams revealed over the weekend that, the club had to keep it a secret, and Barmy said on Friday that they were aware of his issues when they recruited him. How much the depth of the issues, I'm not sure of. The two questions I pose are, we gave up pick 19 for a bloke who we knew had issues. If the public knew then what we know now, how would we have sacked the recruiting staff on the spot? Like, who do we hold accountable for that? Because we've effectively we've used a really high draft pick to pick up someone who we knew had issues, who didn't play a game for the club and who burnt a lot of money out of the salary cap, who we knew was a liability, and we went and got them anyway. Does that sit well with everyone? It doesn't really sit well with me.
I think the same can be said about when we recruited Ben Cousins. We knew it was always going to be a risk, but we seem to be a club that allows another lifeline to players that have had, not the greatest of history at their previous club.
The only difference I have with that is we recruited Ben Cousins with a rookie draft pick very late in the draft save his life. Plough tells a story. That was 100% a welfare thing. There was the upside was if he gets out there and plays, how great. They sold 10,000 extra memberships off the back of it, and that was brilliant for the football club, and they helped him while he was there.
Yeah. The only other thing I will say on the matter is if you have a look at the past games that Carlton played against Richmond and the impact Yaron had for Carlton, we were always saying Yaron was the difference for Carlton because he'd pop up and kick a few goals, which were crucial for Carlton to get over the line, and we'd be like, oh, that bloody Yaron, he's kicked a few goals. When he was at his most elite kicking those goals and playing great football, we were like, we need to play like that. And we've seen, obviously with our recruiting, getting players like Rioli that are now playing those roles, but we had the expectation if we recruit Yaron, regardless of what's going on in his personal life, we'll be able to assist him.
We'll back in our systems.
And we've got a great support staff at Tigerland that are going to help potentially another troubled player come into another football environment to get his mind path on the right track to get him playing great football that he should be playing.
All I've got to say is if Chris Yaron does come back and play again as he wants to, he says he might want to go on an AFL list again, come play for us, minimum chips, and pay us back what we paid you over the last couple of years.
I would agree with that. Yeah. It is an interesting one because, I look at we did give away pick 19. I remember at the time it was all that we had to sell hope. We'd missed out on Adam Treloar and the year before, and we went, geez, we've got to go and pick someone up. We've got to go and get someone. So we ended up getting Chris Yaron. And I know that there were alarm bells at the time of, there might be a bit going on. No one really knew the extent of the issues until now, obviously. And I suppose that begs the next question. Selling hope is something North Melbourne is now trying to do by, they've, you know, 2 weeks ago with Dusty, we thought it was all done, 1.37 years. And we all started patting each other on the back going, he's going to stay. We read today, and there has been some murmurings around that, you know, North's increasingly feeling like Josh Kelly's going to stay. So they've reportedly put 1.5 times 7 on the table because they need to go, they need to get someone, they need to sell some hope.
North shouldn't be surprised, though, if both Dusty and Kelly stay, because I think history will dictate and tell you that players are more likely to stay than they are to go.
But who wants to go to North Melbourne?
Well, that's the question. They're trying to buy him, essentially, to because that's the only reason you would go.
You can't buy players. You can, but, you know, if you actually look, I'm sure the culture's great at North Melbourne, but their playing group just can't get it together enough high-profile players such as a Dustin Martin or a Kelly to really look into a club such as North Melbourne. In my opinion, it's the same as going up to Gold Coast.
They will get it together in the next few years.
Yeah, but at the moment, you know, I don't. If Dusty was to go to North Melbourne, you know, that to me says money hungry, and I don't think he's that kind of character.
I disagree with that. I think the fact he hasn't re-signed is because he's money hungry, and they want to get the absolute best deal for him.
No.
Absolutely,
Dusty's not money hungry anymore.
Then why hasn't he signed?
I'll give you one reason why he hasn't signed. It's a little thing called Charlie. Because if he wins the Brownlow Medal this year, and he definitely will, then all of a sudden, it's a whole different level.
It's
a whole different level, and that's fair enough. He should be entitled to get what he can get for him at the best he can, because you only get one shot at this.
Yeah.
You don't get to come back at 35, 36 years of age and say, oh, hang on, can you please give me an extra $500,000 for all those good years I had? You only get one shot at it, and good luck to him.
Which is why I asked the question. North Melbourne's 1.5 times 7 years. You go, oh, it's only $200,000 more than us. But that's times 7 years. That's $1.4 million. Tax that, you know, let's call it $800,000. That's $800,000 more. That's nearly an extra mil.
But can I also say to you that once you get
Charlie... Would you knock that back?
Once you get Charlie around your neck, all of a sudden you have a legacy that you're leaving to the football world because you're a Brownlow medalist, and the future of your career in the AFL is highly scrutinised. Now, for a Brownlow medalist to go to a club and not perform due to the fact that the people around him aren't performing isn't good for you either. So you might as well stay with Richmond, with a team that you know is on the up for the next 3 or 4 years, and have the best time of your life for $100,000 or so less, and make that money elsewhere.
Yeah.
through corporate deals and
stuff. Spot on.
I'll ask you one question, or two questions in one hit, just before we go. Do you think he's staying? And B, KB posed the question today: if Richmond won the flag this year, would you feel better about him going?
Are he staying? And if we win the flag, no, I'd feel even worse, because I'd want to keep this team, as much of this team as I could together. I know we're going to make 3 changes as a minimum, but as much of this team as we could together for as long as we can to ensure that we have a successful 4, 5, 6 year period coming up. I'd be really, really pissed off if he left us if we won the flag. Absolutely.
Yep.
Carl?
Staying, and yeah. If he was to leave, I think there'd be a somewhat loss of a confidence within the group, because as soon as he puts pen to paper on that contract, the confidence within the group remains. We all know what role he plays at Tigerland and how much of an impact he has and how great he is to his peers. So for him to go, I reckon it'd put us back 5 years.
Just very quickly, and I know we've got to close it down. When you saw Dustin talk to Brad Johnson before the game yesterday...
He's a Richmond man.
And then when they spoke to him, that was the happiest I've ever seen Dustin Martin in an interview. At any situation, he was happy to talk, stood there, shook Brad Johnson's hand, tapped him on the back, all that sort of... Dustin Martin hates cameras, hates microphones, hates doing interviews. That was the first time I'd generally seen Dustin enjoy a chat. And for me, that means to me that he is in a pretty good place at the moment, and I wouldn't be swapping that for the sake of a couple of $100,000. Life can change pretty quickly.
I definitely agree with that, and I think, yeah, for my take, I think he stays. I do, however, think if we get to sort of that first week after the bye week, and we're in the first week of the finals, and there's still no signature then, I think we all have to sort of, you know, maybe prepare for the worst. But we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. Tip this week, St Kilda?
Nathan Buckley to keep his job too. That's my tip.
That's your tip? Yeah, I think so as well.
I think that'll change either. Yep. Did they say he'd know by the end of this week?
Well, they got the meeting on the Tuesday night. Whether they then publicly announce something or not, we don't know. But I would think in the next 10 days, we'll know what's going on
Did
there.
Did you tip St Kilda?
No, I was asking you. Who are you tipping?
Oh, I thought you said
Are you tipping in the St Kilda game?
I broke it last week, so I've got to go. Richmond by 10 goals.
John Barker to be signed as Gold Coast coach. Oh, sorry. No, I think... No, I think we'll get the win and we'll pay tribute to a great servant in the AFL and to the St Kilda Football Club and Nick Riewoldt. Go Tigers.
And it'll be an absolute honour for me to be able to talk him off the ground as he walks off.
Ah, yes.
The voice of the G. Yeah. Well done. I'm tipping Richmond by 4 goals. And, this time next week, we'll be reflecting on the game. And we'll have a little bit of a reflection on the season just gone and before we look ahead to the finals of next week. Gentlemen, thank you so much for your time today.
You know what we need to do? Next year, when we continue this, we need to start a new segment. Who is going to be our welcome home hero?
Oh, each week.
We need to come up with a different name each week to see who we think it might be.
Paul Bullis.
Paul Bullis, that'd be
Can we get one. Paul Bullis back in?
Is Darren right? Gaspar.
Darren Gaspar. Jeff the Gas
Hogg.
Man.
Jeff Hogg.
Jeff Hogg would be fantastic.
Patrick Bowden. We'll
Matthew see. Rogers. So I'm just like Chris Nash. I'm just thinking back to all. I'm thinking back to my Stephen Jurica. Let's get the 1996 team up. The poster I had when I was a kid.
I think they had Nick Daffy, didn't they?
Yeah, the duck.
They had the duck.
Rory Hilton.
Rory Hilton.
There we go.
Gentlemen, I thank you. Go Tigers!
Go Tigers! Tiger alone, the strong and we're vocal with the Tigers.